Welcome to Attention Talk Radio, the show centered around paying attention to attention, with your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper.
All right. Welcome to Attention Talk Radio, the second time did the charm. I'm your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper. Today is Wednesday, October the 5th at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time in the year 2011. It is October of 2011, and we have a lot of exciting things going on here at Attention Talk Radio. A couple announcements before we get into the show. Again, as you noticed from the intro, we'll get our technical team on things to make things right, but we've got a couple new sponsors, which is very, very exciting. Matter of fact, one of our sponsors, the ADHD Coaching Academy, has stood behind us and is helped supporting us celebrate ADHD Awareness Week. And as a result, we have a package of five shows that we're going to bring to you starting October the 17th. That is basically ADHD Awareness Week, brought to you by the ADHD Coaching Academy and Attention Talk Radio, your ADHD information station. We have a big press release that's going to be on the internet tomorrow announcing our series of shows. I've alluded to this in several shows leading up to this, but we're very excited. October 7th, we're going to have Dr. Ned Hollowell coming on talking about what he's excited about in the world of ADHD. Master Certified Coach David Gwork talking about his book, Permission to Proceed. Wednesday, Dr. Michelle Novotny is going to come on and talk about how ADHD Awareness Week came around. She's actually wrote the Senate resolution. It's going to be a very fun show. Thursday, Dr. Ari Tuckman and Barbara Luther are going to come on talking about the difference between ADHD coaching and ADHD therapy. And then we have a surprise show on Friday that we're going to speak a little bit more to a bit later. So if you haven't marked your calendars, please do so. This is going to be exciting. But again, these shows are going to be airing Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday at 8 p.m. So please note that. Also, a few other announcements out there. The CHAD conference is around the corner, 100 miles up the road for us in Tampa, Florida, in Orlando, Florida. It's in November. For more information, go to chadd.org. I've already booked my room. I'm ready to go. So if you're going to attend the conference, look for me while you're there, and love to meet you. Also, some other big news is we are building a new Facebook page, not a new Facebook, but our first Facebook page that we're very excited about. We're hoping it's going to be out the end of this week, early next week. It's very robust. You'll be able to actually access archive shows on it, we hope, among some other things. So just be on the lookout for that. But I guess moving on tonight. Tonight, I was very fortunate enough to have the privilege of interviewing Dr. Richard Bandler. He's the co-creator of NLP. We had to tape the show in advance because he's actually in Europe right now training a bunch of people on techniques and programs. So this is a I'm live, but the interview is actually recorded. So we're going to just run this thing through. I will be manning the chat room, so those who are tuned in, if you've got any questions, at least I can interact with you. So with that, we're going to start the show. I hope you enjoy it. I'll tell you, I learned a lot from the show, and I hope you will too. So without further ado, here we go. Tonight we have Dr. Richard Bandler in our virtual studios talking to us tonight about neo-linguistic programming. What is it, and how can it help my ADHD? Richard was actually a co-founder of neo-linguistic programming some time ago.
Neuro-linguistic programming.
Thank you very much. Neuro-linguistic programming. He was a founder some time ago, and I'm particularly excited about our show tonight because I want to talk about what NLP is, kind of how it works a little bit, and I've been very excited because I was familiar with NLP from a distance, but I didn't really know a lot that was going on, and it's been a great opportunity for me to learn a little bit more about it, and I'm particularly excited about many of the focuses of this and how it moves people forward, because I think it has a lot of similarity with a lot of what coaches and stuff do. So, Richard, I guess, can you talk to us, define what NLP is?
Well, neuro-linguistic programming is the study of both conscious and unconscious successful behaviors. About four decades ago, I personally was involved with a psychiatrist, not going to therapy. I just happened to live in his house while he went away for a year. And I read all of his books, and as somebody who is very adept with mathematics and adept at things like cybernetics, I kept looking at it, waiting for the part where you read how you fix things. And it, other than drug treatments and bizarre therapies, there seemed to be a major flaw in all of it, which was they kept trying to find out what went wrong. And, you know, like if you were programming a computer and you went back through the history to find out when the computer was born and how it was raised and how it was treated in order to program it, you'd never get anything done. So I began to look at things with the flip side. In other words, how do we figure out when people are succeeding, what they're doing? And I did simple things, like I took elementary school kids who were supposed to be educationally handicapped, and rather than giving them a new name and a new excuse and blaming their parents in a new way or blaming their genetics, instead what I did is I went to the California Spelling Bee, I got the person who won the test, sat them down and asked them what they did inside their head. And as it turns out, they made pictures of each word that were about 16 inches tall. They made every letter a different color. And when they saw a new word, they put the picture in their head. They checked it against the letters. And then they recalled it that way. Mm-hmm. And I took educationally handicapped kids and taught them to do that with every word. They could get 10 right on their spelling test every week. In fact, I taught them all 52 weeks in one sitting. And the teachers immediately, you know, looked at me and went, you must be doing something satanic. And, you know, because their superstitions didn't teach them. But they weren't teaching kids how to spell. They were teaching them what words to spell. They believed there was such a thing as a second grade word and a third grade word and fourth grade word. When it doesn't matter how many letters in the word, it's still one mental image. Good spellers know this. They make a picture of a word. They copy it down. Good heavens, you can't even spell phonetics phonetically. Mm-hmm. Now, we went on from that to studying all kinds of behaviors, and not just, you know, psychologists are very big on giving a name to something. Oh, you have a phobia.
Uh-huh.
And when I asked psychologists what the hardest things to deal with, they told me it was obsessive compulsive disorder, phobias, all the stuff that you can't get out of. You can't tell people they're slowly getting better because they won't believe you.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did something called the Phobia Project. I took a whole bunch of phobics and put them in a small dark bus, scared the hell out of them, took them in and gave them all MRIs. And as it turns out, one hemisphere was going wild and the other was doing nothing. So the first thing I did was taught them to confront their fears by tossing a tennis ball back and forth from one hand to the other.
Mm-hmm.
And after they did that for a while, they wouldn't be afraid of being in a closet, a claustrophobic, or going up an escalator. Not terribly good for driving phobias, but it was a start. Then we found out, I literally got people who had fears and got over them, started asking them what they did, recapitulated it in other people, and found out people could literally get over a phobia in 20 or 30 minutes or 15 minutes, you know, because we gave them the right mental programs to be able to do it. Now, we've done this with everything from baseball players to successful business people to first-class athletes to music to art, poetry, everything you can think of. Over four decades, we've built a body of knowledge. Now, at one point in time, somebody came along and started to explain to me what attention deficit disorder was, and it sounded a lot like my life, to tell you the truth.
Mm-hmm.
I have a very short attention span, which is why I like things that work quickly. And to me, I think that most of the things that people have trouble managing are because the way they think about them doesn't give them the kind of determination it takes to finish anything. They're not focused on the end. They're focused on the beginning. They get excited because they have a big picture in their head, but it doesn't show them all the little pictures, and they don't get that sense of endomorphins as they accomplish each step. So they think, you know, my new book is called The Secrets of Being Happy. And one of the big secrets is that instead of going, this is going to make me happy, if I have married and get two kids, then I'll be happy. So you don't get to be happy for 15 years. You know, if I retire, then I'll be happy. And that means you have to work for 40 years before you can start being happy. When you make your images of the things you want to accomplish achievable in the short run and they lead to bigger and bigger goals, people end up remaining propelled forward. That's what a propulsion system is in human beings. People that get things done and finish are the ones that get the endomorphine rush doled out to them as they go along.
Interesting. I, fascinating as you were kind of going through this. I got a question. You started kind of at the beginning with the spelling bee, and you talked to the person that had won the spelling bee, and you were talking about, I'm presuming that you were questioning them to get to the, you know, the 16-inch letters and the different colors in the pictures.
Yes.
And you did that through just kind of questioning them just to try to understand.
Well, I have a specific set of tools. It's actually called the meta model. It's a linguistic tool based on the form of the sentence that allows me to ask just the right questions to get just the right information to know what you have to start with, what you have to do, so that you can sort out and build a program that will process both consciously and unconsciously. On the surface, it sounds simple, and it is pretty simple once you know how to do it. The trouble is, psychologists were saying, why do you have trouble spelling words?
Yep.
You know, you go in and you tell them you're depressed, and they go, what was your relationship with your mother like? And to me, the best thing about the past is that it's over.
Uh-huh.
And the best thing about the future is you can do anything you want with it. We are very adaptable human beings that fire off millions and billions of neurons every few minutes. And our ability to reorganize those in a more functional manner isn't just up to genetics. In fact, you know, genetics has provided us this fabulous tool that has the ability to adapt in an instance.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the powerful changes people have made in their lives, for good or for ill, happened in a short period of time.
Mm-hmm.
I've had clients, they fell in a river and they were scared of water for the rest of their life. And they come in to me and they tell me, you know, I'm crippled from this. I've been in therapy for 5 years. And I look at them and I go, well, think about it. You fell in water, and 3 minutes later, somebody saved you, and you've been
mm-hmm.
scared of water your whole life.
Mm-hmm.
That means in 3 minutes, you should be able to learn something that will last you for the rest of your life. All I have to do is to teach you that water isn't scary. And I know exactly how that works, because in order to function fear, you have to be able to fire. You've got millions and billions of neural pathways.
Uh-huh.
But yet they have to go through that web to just the right one. And in fact, it functions, be it ever so microscopically, by size. And if you run neural pathways backwards, and basically what I do with people with horrible fears is I have them remember the events of being afraid and remember a specific one in reverse. And
mm-hmm.
when they do that, it flattens out the charge in the neuron. And it's almost like they have to learn to be afraid all over again.
And this is kind of fascinating the way you describe this. And can I just – I'd like to try to articulate something here, and you can correct me if I'm right or wrong. In this, when we're talking about the spelling bee and asking those questions to kind of really understand how that person was paying attention to the words to do it, I'm kind of getting a sense that you have a lot of techniques and different ways to kind of help people, because so often they have a picture or they have a feeling, they don't really think about the details and stuff of it, and you can help them pay attention to what's really, really kind of going on and kind of break that stuff down and actually change the way they see it. Is that – am I off base?
No, you're absolutely correct. You know, I actually have two sets of skills. The skills of neurolinguistic programming are the ones that I've created over 4 decades. It's a series of techniques
yep.
that tells you specifically how to do that and specifically how to alter it. On top of that, for 4 decades, I've also been a hypnotist.
Mm-hmm.
And as a hypnotist, you can get people into just the right state to do these things.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that people can't remember these things. It's that the mind's going by really fast. And once you slow people down and get them to really focus, the quality of information, of course, goes way up.
Absolutely. This is such. And I tell you what, I want to run to a commercial break come back to this for a second. But before we do, for those that want to get some additional information, I confirm the best place for them to go is Richard Bandler, RichardBandler.com. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And if they go there, they can get copies. You have a bunch of books that are out, but your more recent one is the Secrets of Being Happy and Get the Life You Wanted, correct?
You can get the life you want, not the one you wanted.
Yeah, that's right. I'm sorry. The life you wanted. Again, you can get those off the website. You can get off of Amazon. And they're also, you said they're in local bookstores as well, right?
Yeah, it's always good to go to your local bookstores and support them. Bookstores are a dying breed. Lots of people are downloading things, and lots of people are buying things off of the huge websites. And it's very nice to have a bookstore to go in so you can peruse and find things that you might not normally look for.
I couldn't agree with you more. So with that, we'll be right back.
Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio. ADHD, is it real? How is it diagnosed? How do I know if I have it or if my children have it? Do you outgrow it? You have questions and we have answers. We're CHAAD, a national organization made up of professionals, parents, educators, and of course, those with ADHD. So if you want real answers to your questions, join CHAAD at www.chadd.org or call us at 800-233-4050.
You deserve the best-trained ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
Has your child been diagnosed with ADHD? Is he not fulfilling his potential? Success in Mind can help. We provide assessments that identify a student's learning profile of strengths and challenges. The result? A practical plan of strategies and tools that go beyond medication that parents, teachers, and students can implement together. If your child needs more success, visit Success in Mind at www.success-in-mind.org.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is timetimer.com.
News, updates, and alerts sent right to your inbox. Sign up now at attentionradio.com.
You're listening to Attention Talk Radio.
And now, back to the show.
Welcome back, everyone. We have Dr. Richard Bandler in our virtual studios, and today we're talking about NLP. Before the break, Dr. Bandler talked a little bit about what NLP was. It's very much a study of the success patterns that are out there. We started talking a little bit about how it works. It was fascinating to me. I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I found a lot of interesting parallel to some of the things that we had talked about in this program. One is to actually pay attention to kind of what's going on in your head and actually kind of how it works. And we had had Greg Kurtz on in September talking about attention exercises and meditation, how to pause and notice what your thoughts are. And we've had David Gwork on in the past talking about his pay attention to what you're paying attention to. And I find what you're talking about, Dr. Bandler, very fascinating in as much as you're understanding and helping. You have techniques to get in people's head to understand how they're seeing that stuff and understand what works, and then helping apply that to people or getting people to kind of actually pay attention to what was going on and focus on what works in order to move them forward. Am I misrepresenting this, or is this kind of the crux of really kind of how this is all happening?
Not at all. See, what we did is started looking at the relationship between the equipment, that is your neurology,
mm-hmm.
and how it influences your thought patterns. If you see, like in my new book, you know, one of the things I find is that people are always putting off being happy, that, you know, and they have a great array of ways of being disappointed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very fond of saying that disappointment requires adequate planning, or you wouldn't know when to do it. So people set up a goal, and when they don't get there, they feel bad, instead of noticing how close they got and feeling better the closer they get to the goal, which would motivate them. They try to motivate themselves by unpleasantness.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, they if they feel like they're running out of time, the stress gets them to do things. Instead of, you know, the closer they get to getting something done, the better they feel. And our neurology is really designed for recognition. If you buy a little red car, you suddenly start seeing red cars everywhere. If somebody tells you a word you've never heard before, it starts to pop up everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I remember once in college that somebody told me the word ubiquitous, which means everywhere. And I thought, good God, I've never heard that word. And then in the next week, I heard it 20 times.
Mm-hmm.
And our reticular activating system is designed to do that. If we focus in our mind on what works, what happens is we start recognizing it everywhere and we start using it everywhere. So when I take somebody that tells me they're not artistic, and I explain to them first cognitively what an artist actually does. So if somebody is painting a tree across a river and I say, look, what the artist does is visualize a great big hand with a pencil in it outlining the tree. There's
mm-hmm.
a wire going from that hand to his own hand on the paper. so that he's just following the trace that he sees.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly that person is able to trace things from the outside because
mm-hmm.
he knows the same mental trick that the artist uses. Now, you know, that happens to be a successful strategy. I've done the same thing with people who can remember 40 names. I can do the same thing with people who remember dates. All of these little strategies, which we call NLP strategies, are really just representations of how our neurology works and how you get your neurology to be able to function with a successful behavior, whether it's remembering, drawing, throwing a baseball, hitting a golf ball. There's all ways that work and loads of ways that don't work. If you go out and notice your mistakes, think of what they do to us in school. You
mm-hmm.
go to school anywhere from, you know, 12 to 20-some-odd years, and every time you write something down, all they do is mark out every mistake you make. They mark out every word you misspell, every math problem that's wrong. So they train your brain to look for what's not working instead of training you to look for what works. And we pay a very heavy price for this, not just academically, but personally, because we're programmed to look for mistakes instead of
mm-hmm.
programming ourselves to take the few things that work and build from it and make more things that work.
It's so many times in the show, I've always kind of like one of my mantras is what's obvious is a function of what you're paying attention to. And earlier when you're talking about, you know, word ubiquitous, you know, you never saw it because you weren't looking for it. And then once you heard it, you see it kind of everywhere.
That's
and
what our reticulating activist statement says. That's part of our brain is designed to do that.
And again, what you're in the I really liked what you said about in a classroom they mark what you did wrong, and so you're negatively programmed to look for what's wrong, and you never really are paying attention to what goes right because you're always looking for what's wrong.
Well, you make the decision that the word you misspelled is a hard word, not that you misspelled it. And so, therefore, you should be looking, you know, what they should do is they literally should fade out the mistake that you made and clearly write the thing that's correct
mm-hmm.
so that you learn in your mind to disappear things that don't work and to appear things that do. And, I mean, I've done this over and over again with things that are, you know, from things that are academic to things that are incredibly personal and intense. I mean, I have people that have been dwelling on the same bad memory through 20 years of therapy,
mm-hmm.
and they come in to me, and I have them shrink it down to the size of a quarter, blink it black and white for a few seconds, and then they have trouble thinking about it. Because the brain is also not designed to learn slowly. The brain is designed to learn quickly. If I write stick figures on a piece of paper and flip through it, you'll see the stick figure get up and walk and dance. If I hand you one a week for 5 years, you wouldn't even know why I was doing it.
Mm.
And so when I teach people to take, you know, humongously bad memories and suddenly shrink them down to the size of a quarter, blink them black and white really fast, it gets the brain to not think about it. And when they go back and attempt to think about it, they typically have trouble doing it because it interferes with the automatic transmission of that information at the neurological level. And teaching people to shrink down bad memories and to put up big memories. I'm about to do a class in London for a couple of days, and it's about getting people's lives to be better and more successful. And one of the major techniques that I try to teach people is to take the five or six best memories of their entire life, make them humendously big pictures, I mean by 40 by 40 foot screens in their head, and
mm-hmm.
make them contiguous so that they go from one memory to the next memory to the next memory to the next memory, and then think about what they want to do next.
Mm-hmm.
So that instead of going through all of the things that didn't work out in your life and then trying to figure out what you can do, you go to all the things that really worked in your life and then think about what you want to do. And it's amazing how powerful this is for people because it realigns the reticular activating system and gets people to look for what's possible as opposed to what's impossible.
It's fascinating you describe this. I've said this a couple different times in the show. This Attention Talk Radio started as an audio blog when I did my coaching practice because I didn't really want to blog because writing is difficult for me due to my dyslexia and learning disability. And I started paying attention to this. This all kind of came about because I realized that verbalization was what was successful for me in the past, and I just tried to extend it into the space. And the growth of it has been just a result of just me being me, which is kind of reinforcing stuff. I was paying attention to what I can do and what's worked, things that worked for me in the past to move it forward. So
Again, it's not that you can't ride. It's that it was difficult for you in the past.
Yep.
And there were lots of things in the past that were difficult for you that you can now do. One time it was difficult to ride a bicycle, and you probably can do that now.
Yep.
And, you know, the trouble is, you know, the whole Montessori learning system was based on the idea that if you were a verbal person, you should do everything verbally. And that kind of cripples you for life.
Mm-hmm.
There should be those opportunities where you look at things that are very hard for you and you look at them as being a challenge and change the way you feel as you approach them. Because the disservice that was done to somebody like you about writing things down was the achievement of our school system, not the achievement of your nervous system.
To
blame your nervous system on this means you never try. And it's not, you don't have ADHA. It's something that you're doing. And if you look at it as something you're doing, you can do something differently. You know, and if you literally take really good feelings and spin them rapidly in your body and start writing, you'll feel differently about writing, and therefore you'll do better.
Absolutely.
I've been developing these techniques for 4 decades, and I have taken people with writer's block. I've taken people that swore they couldn't play the piano. It doesn't matter what it is. If you change the way you feel and that changes the way you think, it changes what you do. If you change the way you think, it changes the way you feel. It changes what you do. It doesn't even matter what the order of it is. When you make big dramatic changes in the way you process, that is, the pictures in your head, the tone of voice you talk to yourself, whether the voice is on the right or the left, whether the pictures are in color and black and white, and whether they're movies and whether they're clear and how close they are, when you go and start thinking deliberately, then you can start believing other things than what you believe. As long as you believe it's difficult to write, you'll never really ever try with every fiber of your soul.
Absolutely. Well, I tell you what, I need to run to our second break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about helping those with ADHD. But before we go, a reminder, to get more information, go to www.richardbandler.com. That's RichardBandler.com. And don't forget to go to your local bookstore and look for Secrets of Being Happy and Get the Life You Want. So with that, we'll be right back.
You're listening to Attention Talk Radio. We'll return in a moment. Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is TimeTimer.com.
Experience the difference with a top-notch ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
Do you have something those with ADHD need? Advertise on Attention Talk Radio. We are a narrowcast, internet-based radio show targeting those with or impacted by ADHD. To learn more about advertising opportunities, email attention at attentiontalkradio.com.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everyone. We're with Dr. Richard Bandler talking about NLP and specifically what is it and how it can help my ADHD. Top of the show, we talked a little bit about what it is, how it works. Dr. Bandler, can you talk to us a little bit about more specifically about how it can help those with ADHD?
Well, when you use those letters, what exactly are you referring to? I mean, because, see, it really runs a huge gamut. I went to a place where supposedly all the kids there had attention deficit disorder. And oddly enough, they were all sitting there playing video games without any lapse in their attention. And, you know, it seemed to, you know, I pointed this out to the teacher, and they said, oh, well, but ADHD people can be very obsessive about certain things. And I said, you mean things they like? And I think he took it personally.
Pause.
I said, if they're not paying attention in your class, could it be that you're not as interesting as the video game? And, you know, he said, well, that's not really the point. We all have to pay attention to things we hate. Well, the truth is yes, we do, but that doesn't mean we have to hate them. You know, if you make something more interesting, you'll pay greater attention to it. And if you make something into, you know, more of a game, some years ago I made some computer games, and they were designed to teach people to spell and how to read better and all these things. And I made them into action-packed games.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting in that, you know, people with attention deficit disorder liked the games, so therefore they had no problem paying attention. And, you know, whereas they had problem paying attention to their teacher. And I think that's more of a comment on the teacher than it is on what we're now calling a disorder.
I couldn't agree with you more.
You know, on the radio here, I heard the other day some doctor came on and said 7% of the population has attention deficit disorder. And if you came into his office, your mind would get clearer in 20 minutes. Of course, that's what every drug dealer will offer you.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, it's not that the drugs are bad, but we give way too much Ritalin to way too many kids and Adderall and all of these things, as opposed to teaching them to focus their mind. I have a new device that we released this year called the Brain Fit, which is a light sound machine, and it teaches people to focus. And we gave this to kids with attention deficit disorder and let them use it for 20 minutes twice a day.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly their grades go up about 30%. And it's because it stabilizes their mental state. They learn to stay in one state longer. And we trick them by making that state pleasant. And, you know, to me that if you learn, because it seems like where a lot of hypnotists use the word trance, I use the word concentration.
Mm-hmm.
To me, really good concentration and a trance state are not profoundly different. In fact, now we can measure them. I actually have a little device you pop on people's heads and you use your iPhone and you can watch their brainwave patterns. It's a very cool little thing. And, you know, they have an app for everything now. This is an app for hypnotists to watch. But when I get people whose mind is all over the place, most of the time I find that what I'm looking at is not just that their mind is shifting, it's shifting to unpleasant states, that people become stressful if they sit too long. People become stressful when they look at a table full of stuff. If
mm-hmm.
they have homework, they don't do it because the longer they look at it, the more stressful it becomes
mm-hmm.
because we're not teaching people to become calm and determined.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a learnable phenomenon, you know, that even in school, you know, they teach you to watch the clock. They give you timed quizzes. And everything is if you don't do this by this time, you're supposed to get more and more stressed out.
Uh-huh.
Because a lot of people motivate themselves well with stress, but not everybody does.
Mm-hmm.
And if we teach people to become calmer, which is not that hard of a thing to do, we just have to teach them how you do it. It's like anything else. You know, that you talked about somebody coming on who was teaching people to meditate.
Mm-hmm.
Meditation, yoga, these are all ways where people learn to concentrate.
Mm-hmm.
Me, I'm not that patient. I've developed a machine that will teach you in a matter of seconds to relax.
Sure.
You know, most of the audio tapes and things I put out have resonant brainwave patterns underneath them that calm people into alpha very rapidly. Because the more familiar you get with being calm, the more familiar you get with being determined and responding to challenge, not by making excuses. The fact that, you know, you have attention deficit disorder should make you more determined, not less determined. And when you say, I can't do this because of my attention deficit disorder, you just become less determined as a human being. When you're the very person who needs to become more determined, you need to focus even harder. You need to be able to become calmer and clearer. And teaching people how to do those things is not something that's amorphous. It doesn't take 20 years of yoga. It takes, you know, 5 or 10 minutes a day for a week to learn to do this. It's like spelling. Spelling isn't something that should take years. It's something that once you learn how to make big pictures of words, then every word you look at, you pop up in your head and you can spell it.
Sure, sure. One of the things that those with ADHD complain about is procrastination. Can you describe how NLP can help those get over procrastination?
Well, here's the odd thing. People never wait to procrastinate. They do that right away. So
uh-huh.
already it sort of destroys itself. The question is, what do you do in order to procrastinate? Well, in order to procrastinate, and rather than looking at something and becoming more determined, see, you know, if you're walking along and you see a $5 bill sitting on the ground, most people don't procrastinate to pick it up.
Mm-hmm.
There's this sense of urgency that you want to be the first one to grab it. If you're,
yep.
a lot of people are standing around, your hand, your eye movement all fire off at once.
Yep.
And that feeling you need to have when you look at a task.
Mm-hmm.
You need to look at the task and figure out how to make it harder and how you're going to fail at it and how disappointed everybody will be. All of that extra thinking slows you down.
Mm-hmm.
If you just look at it and you think, what's the first step, second step, third step, and every bit you get closer, you become more determined. And you see, when everybody, no matter who they are or what name you give to their procrastination, whether you call it attention deficit disorder or stupidity, doesn't matter to me. It just means you're not doing it. You're doing something else instead.
Mm-hmm.
You're thinking about what it's going to be like when you fail. You're thinking about tomorrow. You're thinking about
mm-hmm.
going out and playing golf. It doesn't matter what you're thinking about. You're not thinking about how to get it done.
Mm-hmm.
The thing about the brain is it's designed to be adaptable, and it's designed to be adaptable based on focus and purpose. If you sit there right now and turn your head as far to the right as you possibly can and then
mm-hmm.
look forward, well, your head will go so far. But if you imagine behind you that there's a spider coming down a string, turn your head to the right, it will actually go further because your neurology is designed to work in relationship to purpose.
Hmm.
Works, doesn't it?
Interesting. That's fascinating.
Well, if you want your neurology to function, you need to have the purpose clearly in mind. You need to see yourself finishing the task and being happy, and you need to feel that you want that happiness.
Mm-hmm.
And then you back up and you go, if I get this much done in 10 minutes and this much done in 20 and this much done in 30, then I'll have it done. So you go back and see yourself doing the first 10 minutes happily.
Mm-hmm.
And every step of the way, you make yourself feel better. Now, here's the trick. When you feel good or when you feel bad, when you feel procrastination, have you ever procrastinated?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Can you remember procrastinating?
This morning.
Okay. When you procrastinated, okay, take your finger, hold it next to you, and spin it forward and then tumble it backwards and then go clockwise and counterclockwise. When you're procrastinating, which way do your feelings spin?
Counterclockwise.
Okay. Now, literally, spin them a little faster. Think about
uh-huh.
what you were procrastinating. Spin them a little faster, and it'll feel a little worse.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, slow it down and slow it down even more. Now, spin it in the opposite direction.
Mm-hmm.
And think about what you were procrastinating, and you won't feel like it anymore.
Mm.
And if you spin it fast enough, it will just literally disappear.
Interesting.
Now, this is neurologically based. We have something called the entemic nervous system. This is the connection between all the solid organs and all of your intestines, what psychologists like to call feelings. But it's part of our nervous system. It doesn't exist devoid of the human body.
Mm-hmm.
Our ability to control the entemic nervous system so that when we feel fear, when we feel anxiety, when we feel procrastination, first you make it a little worse, then you slow it down, and you make it spin in the opposite direction faster and faster. It will dissolve that feeling, and then you still need to have a purpose. You need to think, if I do this, what will it mean about me?
Mm.
I get people to solve very difficult problems. For 4 decades, I have taken everything that psychiatrists have given up on, schizophrenics, manic depressives, obsessive compulsives. And when they come to me, they've tried absolutely everything. So, number one, I have absolutely nothing to lose. But
mm-hmm.
number two, they always come to me and you go, you're my last hope. And I go, you're
yep.
in deep trouble then. Because unlike a psychologist, I have no personal vested in whether you get better or not. But let me ask you this. You know, if I have somebody who's got agoraphobic and can't walk out of their house, I ask them, I go, if you could walk out in the front yard, walk up and down 100 yards back and forth without feeling bad, what would that mean about you? See, if I can get a height phobic to go up to the top of a building and look out the highest window without being afraid, what would that mean about you?
Mm-hmm.
And they always go, what do you mean? And I go, would that mean that you could change anything? If you could do this one thing, what it would mean is that you're wrong about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, you could do absolutely anything. Now, once I propose it to them, then I start in and I go, how much time have you spent worrying about this? That's the big one.
Yeah.
With some people, it's 20 minutes a day. Some people, it's a half an hour. It could be anything to an
yep.
hour to 2 to 3 hours a day. I calculated out by the weeks, added up for 10 years, and say to them, you're planning to spend 5, 10, 15,000 hours having this problem for the next 10 years.
It's
and when you put it in that perspective, they look at it and they go, oh, my God, that's ridiculous. And I go, it absolutely is ridiculous. And all you need is one example of spinning your feelings, and I get them to spin their feelings in the opposite direction, walk out of the front of their house, go to the top of the building, and they walk back and they look at me and they go, that was easy. Well, the only things that work are the things that are easy.
Fascinating.
Contrary to what any psychologist will tell you, that change is slow and painful. Actually, it's rapid and almost nondescript when humans make really pervasive positive change.
Well, with Dr. Bandler, I could go. We could go on for another 30 minutes, but we're bumping up against the end. I got to thank you very much for coming on the show. This has been very enlightening for me. I learned an awful lot. I want to remind our listeners out there, if you want to learn more or purchase this book online, go to richardbandler.com. That's RichardBandler.com. And you can also get his books in your local bookstore. So with that, again, Dr. Bandler, thanks for coming on the show.
You bet.